Accession number 30085, Reel 4.
Right, and this is Nicholas Gibbs, Reel 4, isn't it?
Anyway, by this time, American money was being pumped into Croatia. And they had built a new shopping centre near the railway station, which I remember going down. It was full of sort of Western clothes. and I think entrepreneurs had got a grip. The American embassy, I think, was the Imperial Hotel. But there were some quite smartish hotels operating in the area. Anyway, I went into a tourist office to see if I could get into Canine, because I wanted to know whether there were hotels open in Canine, because it was now, what, 4 or 5 weeks after? And asking if there were any hotels, and I was told yes, there were, but they weren't open to foreigners. And as I was standing there, this girl beside me said, "What a strange question to ask," in what I thought was broken English. And I thought, spy. So, anyway, we began. She said, "Why do you want to go there?" And I said, "Because I'm an artist and I want." And she said, "We ought to talk about this." And I thought, "Oh God, this is spy country. I don't want to talk about this, especially somebody I don't know. I might end up dead." So, she said, "I'm staying in the hotel next door. And I'm about to leave. Come and talk, and talk to me whilst I pack." So I thought, "What is this? What's going on here?" So I do. I go back, and she turns out to be an English American Jew who is there selling medical supplies to anybody who will buy them, whether it's going to be the Croat government or the UN or whatever. And she then packs up her stuff, and I help her with her suitcases downstairs, where she refuses to pay the hotel bill because she says it's ghastly. And the man at the desk then appeals to me. I said, "I've got nothing to do with this." She says, "I'm not paying this bill. It's a disgusting hotel. I'll never come here again." Anyway, having gone through that, we went to a cafe with the suitcase. And she then took me to the Jewish headquarters, and I wasn't quite sure what it was, but it was a huge building not far from the railway station, which helped Jews in the area. And she showed me the sort of synagogue, and it was fascinating going in. I had the bizarre situation of sitting in this dining room watching Sky television. So I was listening to English news and English weather. And then we arranged to meet that evening, so we met in a cafe that evening. And she then had a meeting with the UN. And so I went with her, and I got into the UNHQ. And it was Swedish turn to operate. And so she made me photograph herself with the Swedish guards, UN guards. And the compound was stuffed full of porter cabins, which they operate from. And everybody in the officials in the UN porter cabins were all from all over the world. And the person we met had been born in Jamaica, worked in the UN in New York, become American. She was living in Austria, she shopped in Hungary, and she drove to Zagreb every day. Her child, who was 6 years old, went to school in Zagreb. And so I talked locations with her, and my friend talked about medical supplies to the supplier. Anyway, that was fun. And I said, "I'm going into the battle zone tomorrow. Do you want to come?" And she said, "No, I've got lots of meetings. I've got a meeting with the Croatian Minister of the Interior." And so I left her to it. And then we met up again, and there was an exposition going on in Zagreb, in the middle of a war zone. And they open up in an international exposition selling God knows what. So she had been invited to that, so she took me. And we sat next door to a... And we went on a bus, the first time I'd been on a bus in... Not from... A bus in Zagreb. And the guy didn't give up his seat. So she, like my ex, she made a fuss. And I pretended I didn't know her. But she was shouting in English. So we got to the exhibition. We had very, very expensive food, because I think it had, by this time, they'd altered the currency to kuna, and therefore it was 9 kuna to the pound. And so it made everything very, very expensive. And that was the other thing, my previous journey, everything, you spent Deutschmarks. They would accept lots of German money or dollars. But anyway, we became firm friends, and she came to my next exhibition, which was held in London afterwards.
How did you get on with your locations, though? Because you were trying to get to Knien, weren't
well,
you?
I tried to get, failed to get to Knien, but I went back into, where did I go? It was either Sisak or Karlovac. I went to a place called Petrinja. So I took a train.
Petrinja.
Petrinja. Well, I think Petrinja.
Petrinja.
And I can't pronounce it. And yes. After hundreds of times being told how, I could never get that Croatian click to the name. Anyway, so I took a train to Sisak, and I started walking. With my canvases, and it was about 6 kilometres to the battlefront.
This is at Petrinja.
Petrinja.
From Sisak.
From Sisak. I think it was Sisak. I'd have to look at the map now. Anyway, it was a deserted road, deserted fields, bombed out villages as you went through. And then this car came along, and it stopped, to my surprise. And this guy said something to me from the other side of the car, because they have the driving on the other side of the car. And so I said I was English. He said, "You English, me Croat. You get in. I take you up road." So I thought, well, I've got a long way to walk, and I'm get there quicker. So as we drove, the refugee track started coming towards us. Sort of farm miniature tractors with these huge trailers on the back with furniture and people on it. And he was swerving. And I thought he was trying to show off to me of weaving in and out of the traffic, coming the opposite way. But it got quite dramatic, the swerving, even when there was no refugee traffic. And suddenly we went off the road and back onto it. And so I put my hand out, because I thought he was ill. And I suddenly realised he was pissed as a newt. He was absolutely stinking. I couldn't smell anything. But we eventually got to the checkpoint. And we got out. And the Croats wanted to know who I was. So I whipped out of my pocket photographs of my paintings, because I always kept photographs of my paintings just to prove, and my passport. And one of the guards came over to me and he said, "Where did you get this guy from?" And I said, "He picked me up 5 kilometres back on the road." He said, he's drunk. I said, "I know, what are you going to do about it?" He said, "Nothing, we're going to send him home." So the guard then said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm painting the ruins." He said, "You want to go in?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I'll get you a lift." So he said, this guy is going in. It was a policeman in a blue, almost what in the army used to call baby uniforms, a sort of jumpsuit with policy on the thing. Get into the police car. First thing he says, you get in the other side, so get in on the driver's side, because the English way. So the first thing I had to do was lift the revolver or the pistol off the passenger seat. I said, what do I do with this? He said, put it on the floor. So I put the pistol on the floor and we went in, and we drove into Petrinja, which was about 5 kilometres. He said, where do you want to go? And I said, anywhere, because I'm anywhere with the ruins. So he dropped me off at this village, which the Croats had taken out, and all the buildings were burnt out. He said, do not go off the road, mines everywhere. He said, if you want to go back, there is a bus that comes every 2 hours. And by this time, refugee traffic had started coming again. Huge lines of out of the Second World War. But what was bizarre is my attitude was, I was detached, and so it was like watching television. You just watched these people come towards you. You were nothing to do with it. It was like watching television. And in fact, looking through the windscreen of this car, it was like watching exactly like watching television. You were protected. You had a policeman beside you. He was friendly. So you were perfectly okay.
What sort of state were they in, the people?
It was as though they'd just been kicked out of their homes. And I think there was a certain amount of economic travelling going on. I think they were considered, it was the battle zone, it was dangerous, so they weren't going to stay there. They could have stayed there. There was the idea, are we going to be shot, or can we stay in our homes without any problem, and shall we whack that wasp?
Oh, it's a wasp, is it?
Yes,
yes. Yes, oh, I think it's...
Is it no, just remain here. Careful, it won't sting unless you...
It's okay. I think it's gone. Yes. These weren't being ethnically cleansed, as it is called.
No, I think they were economic migrants. Mm. I think they couldn't farm their lands because it was too dangerous. So they were just going to new lands and probably wanted to go back. So anyway, I started taking various photographs from the road.
Did you take photos of the refugees, or was that...
No, I... because I was there for the ruins, I should have taken other refugees, but I wasn't... those weren't my subjects. Mm.
Would you have felt differently, you know, about that, taking them from...
I feel different. Well, I feel strange about taking photographs of people full stop, whether they're now or whether it's a battle zone, is I don't normally like taking photographs of people. I love taking photographs of items. When I go around churches, I spend hours taking photographs of all the monuments, because I can circle looking for the right angle, the angle that I want, and there's nobody there to blink or move.
And whenever you could talk about your desire to be alone when you're doing
the
this
desire
work.
To be alone is from exploring. I like, because I am heavily involved in research, the idea that you are the first one to discover it is fantastic. You get goose pimples, and that rolls over into my painting. I want to be the first, rather like an archaeologist going through the jungle and suddenly come across an ancient temple. Nobody's ever seen it before, and you suddenly realise what it is. The gripping feeling that you must get back and tell everybody else what you found. And research for me is a drug, as I want to go and discover more and more and more. And I paint what I research, and I research what I paint. So if I'm painting, I was painting in Petrinja, as I went back to Zagreb and wanted to know all about Petrinja and what had happened there. And when I got back to England, I then started reading up about Petrinja and what it had been like 100 years before, and where, what was its place in the Balkan history.
So all the photographs and the paintings you do, you know your subject, you know a lot about that place.
Afterwards or before, it depends. Mm. If I happen upon a place, I want to know about it, so I'll go and research it. If I'm told about a place, somebody will then give me a rundown of it, and then I'll go and see it, and so therefore it works the other way around. But I'll equally then, after the visit, go back and do more research on it as well. And the whole thing with the research is connecting things up, because nothing exists by itself. There's always a backup system. One town exists upon another, and one race upon another race, and so on. And this is how races of subjugation move across the world. But anyway, I'm back in this Serb village, and there are a whole lot of shell cases on the ground, so I pick those up as souvenirs, stuff them into my pockets, and I'm photographing the ruins, and suddenly the refugee traffic stops. There's nothing on the road, and the refugee traffic disappears from where I've come, and there's nothing coming, and I wonder what the hell's going on. And then suddenly I see two soldiers coming towards me from the battle zone. And it's like it's an optical illusion. You're not sure whether they're going away or coming towards you. And I thought, if they've got rifles, I'm in trouble, because no Croat, no language they'll probably understand. And as I stood and I hid my cameras in the ditch, because I had my cheapy good one, and I had one of those throwaway cameras, and then I emptied my pockets of all the shell cases again. So if I caught the shell cases, they think I've had a gun, I've been firing. So I just stood there and waited, and as they came close, I noticed that they were boy soldiers. They didn't have berets, and they looked tired, and they didn't have rifles. And they asked me a question. I said, I'm English. So one said in broken English, the bus, where bus? And I'd been told the bus every 2 hours, so I pointed to the bus stop, another 100 yards up the road. So the bus came along, strange enough, about 10 minutes later, and they got on it. But it was that was a bizarre situation, because I wasn't sure what was going to happen. And then, by a strange coincidence, the policeman came back, and he stopped, and he said, how are you doing? I said, well, I've finished now, in fact, and I wait for the bus. He said, no, I take you, but I can only take you so far. So he took me back to the checkpoint, where I caught the same bus that the two soldiers had got. Anyway, I got on, and the Croat driver said something to me, and I said, I don't understand, because I wanted to pay the money as I got on. And I surprised myself, because the bus was full. And I said, anybody speak English? And this guy at the back says, he wants you to pay later. So the bus took us back to, I think it was CSAC we went to. I'd have to look at my photographs of the railway station, because I know the photographs I took of the railway station would identify the station I'm at. But I went to CSAC and Carlvats quite a lot, and they're very similar town-wise where the station is and so on. I remember at CSAC, again, they always had old-fashioned steam engines as sort of monuments to the past, as the age of steam.
Could I ask you about this painting, the one that you have very kindly given to the Imperial War Museum? Ruins of War, I believe.
Now, that was one of the photographs I took on this particular journey. And that's what most of the village looked like. And yet, that was the other most surreal thing, is amongst the village was a perfect house with perfectly mown lawns, and there was a guy mowing the lawn. Obviously, it belonged to a Croat, and it was absolutely pristine, painted white with nice flowers everywhere in the centre of this devastation.
So he would have been a Croat.
He probably would have been a Croat
amongst Serbs.
Serbs, the Croats had a tendency, I think, so I'm told, was once they took a village, they were not concerned about throwing the Serbs out and living in the houses themselves, they destroyed the houses, the Serb houses as well, so the Serbs could not come back. That was the whole policy. So that was that journey. But strange enough, I did exactly the same journey 2 days later, because I thought I'd go back in. Mm-hmm. And by this time I got into Pethrinja, and that was totally devastated. The entire square in the town was ruined. And there was one fascinating pattern that I couldn't take my eyes from. It's the tiles on a roof. A shell had come in, obviously, on the top floor, and it had exploded. And obviously all the tiles had lifted off, but they come back down. But instead of coming back straight, as they'd originally been laid, straight down, they got a wave in them. On the entire roof, there was a wave of the explosion. Anyway, I was told that this was a very dangerous area and I should not have a camera. So I thought, what do I do? I'm not coming all this way not to get some image of the place. So I did actually do a whistle-stop tour of the town. I walked around the entire town with my camera poking out of my pocket, pressing the shutters as I went through, and I didn't know what I was going to get. And I specifically made sure the flash was inside my pocket so nobody could see it. Mm-hmm. There were soldiers everywhere, tanks on corners. But that was, yes, total devastation. And I was asking how to get back out. So I was told when the bus would go. It was professor was staying with long hair, looking as though he'd just come out of the 1960 demonstrations. So again, took the bus back out. And strange enough, the checkpoint had disappeared by this time, 2 days later. So people were obviously thinking it was reasonably safe.
Would this have been related to the Krajina exodus, all this devastation you're witnessing in the village?
The battles had occurred probably, because the battles had occurred 2 months before, I was told, in this Serb village that this painting emanates from. Yes, the battle had been 6 weeks before, I was told.
This house, you know, going back to the ruins of war, because I expect the museum would like to know as much as you can tell them about this, as it's going to be a picture which will be exhibited. It looks a very substantial house. Would that have been typical?
Typical, and designed on the German style. And I think, if I hadn't said already, before the war, Yugoslavia, not being totally to the communist teaching, it had many migrant workers which would go out to Germany, come to England, work as painters and whatever, house painters. And they would then send money back to the country, which would then be saved up to build their own houses. So when they came back themselves to build their own houses, they built their houses out of breeze block, and they were very influenced by the German style of housing. So most of these houses that you see are bombed out and are roofless, not always, are casualties of war. Sometimes the people have got so far building their house and they haven't had enough money to put the roof on, and they then were caught up by the war, so the house was never finished. Particular house has been taken out by shell fire, and it was used as a firing position, because there are the base of the windows had sandbags, bombed out sandbags, and also there were burnt marks and pit marks all the way around the windows where obviously some gunman had been. And on the side of the house there are pit marks or pock marks, which is a sign of gunfire and mortar. And I showed this to after I'd done the painting, I had a general who came to dinner one night and showed him the picture. He said, That's always the thing you see when you sign of the mortars, is the pit marks. And in fact, I remember as a child, because we lived in Berlin when I was a teenager, and we used to have a competition to see which houses had been involved in the Battle of Berlin, and you could always identify that by the pit marks around the windows.
Did that appeal to you, though, as a composition, an image, apart from as a record of what had happened to that house? You know, why?
It wasn't the house. It was an image of what was happening throughout the entire country. It symbolised just devastation. And it also symbolised battle as well. It wasn't just a civilian house. People fought from it. And I find it foreboding. It's rather like a castle that you find in a forest, a medieval castle, waiting for the turrets of Dracula to come out. But I loved it. Why did I give it? It was an exhibition at Christie's. There was a show for old Harrovian art, all the famous old Harrovians who had been painters, going right back to, I think, Grant was one, in Victorian times. Then there were people like Cecil Beaton. Who else was there? Field Marshal Alexander had his stuff, Churchill. Who else was there? There is a famous artist, not Pascoe. I'd have to look up on the list. I should know. But all the great artists. Litchfield was supposed to have opened the exhibition, but died, actually, about 8 days before. So anyway, that was one of the, I exhibited that at that exhibition.
And did it attract attention?
Attract attention as a war artist, yes. In fact, it got a mention in the Sunday Telegraph magazine.
Is this true to the photograph, or how would that
differ?
Very,
almost exactly.
Yes, I was wondering if you touched it up at all with those trees and bushes.
They're all exactly as it was.
Yeah, and the house is next door.
Yep. I know a lot of painters tend to, when they paint things, leave out because it detracts. But I think then why choose the subject if you've got something in front of you? Why leave things out which are not truthful? I think a lot of landscape artists leave out electric pylons. Then don't go and sit in front of an electric pylon. That's why I always circle my subject, looking for the best view, so you don't actually have to paint in anything you don't that is there.
End of Reel 4, Nicholas Gibbs.